This is DreamWords. Tom Corvin by Paul Story. Chapter 9. Without a name, the boy was a non-person. He craved a label as though it held his soul. He felt like a good person, and a good person would have a good name. But Tom Corvin was tainted, corrupt. The label a stain on his developing self-image. But he couldn't take the name without the guilt. A part of him denied the charge. Surely he would know if he was a murderer. He would feel the evil inside. And because he didn't, he reasoned, the dream was just a dream. He wrestled with his conscience, trying to master his thoughts before he engaged with Catriona. Before he brought her to the shame of his deed. His instinct was to push the conclusion away. The dream meant no more than his conversation with the duck, but that was too easy. The blood on his hand was real enough. It was gone when he awoke in the cottage, but that wasn't surprising. If his night in the rain hadn't washed it off, then his rescuers would have when they cleaned him up. Did they see the blood? Perhaps that's why they'd acted so strangely towards him. He was now sure that the incident on the boat was a mixture of déjà vu and imagination. Far from attempting to kill him, the man had tried to stop Tom from toppling from the boat and saved him when he did. His rescuers were suspicious of him. From the moment he'd arrived, they'd kept him at a distance. And who could blame them? He was suspicious of himself. But what now? If he did kill someone, even in self-defense, the police would be after him. The very people he'd run to when he reached civilization would be as likely to arrest as help him. A criminal, a murderer, might feign amnesia to escape punishment. Perhaps that's what they would say. He knew who he was, but pretended otherwise. And who was the driver? The bald man, his victim. The questions curdled and spun in his head, but the conclusions were as elusive as peace. He distilled what he thought he knew. The deep-rooted belief that he was Tom Corvin would not disappear, and so Tom Corvin he was. The blood in his hand was real. It was his right hand, the same one that held the rock. He'd awoken, injured, at the base of a cliff in the middle of nowhere. Maybe the very cliff where he killed the bald man. A low groan rumbled the air like whispering thunder, the distant pain another echo of the boy's actions. With no memory of the event beyond the brief and disjointed scenes in his dream, Tom tried to feel what he felt then, in the car. Edge to the door, one hand poised ready to strike and the other on the handle, his heart pumping liquid fear through his veins. He was being kidnapped. No one would blame him. Surely. He would go to the police. The alternative was a life on the run, not knowing who he was, where he came from, and whether he was a killer or the winner in an unequal battle. The cottage shook, the blackness of the night, a dark patch of rectangular glass on the wall. Tomorrow, he decided. He would find his way out tomorrow and hand himself in. That settled, Tom looked at the dying fire. He eased himself from the sofa, removed the guard and placed a solid log onto the glowing ashes from a small pile by the side of the hearth. Open the vent at the bottom. Tom looked up, mildly startled by the intrusion. Catriona's dark eyes reflected the soft glow of burning embers. It needs oxygen. Tom nudged the hot vent with a piece of kindling and the embers brightened as a small yellow flame licked the edge of the log and danced for their pleasure. Replacing the guard, he returned to the sofa, took the duvet and curled up to face the girl. Your father, how is he? The girl blushed, or the catching fire reddened her cheeks. She thought about his question so long that he wondered if perhaps he had not heard him. When he was about to repeat himself, she said, "He's not my father." Tom didn't know what to say to that. He was so caught up in his own problems that he gave little thought to the relationship between the girl and the man. "Sorry," he said. "I just thought, he's my uncle." Her confidence had disappeared. She was now a little girl stammering replies that sounded like lies. Why she would lie was a mystery, but that's what it sounded like. Let it pass. Her reasons were none of his business. "How is he, your uncle?" "I'm worried. I've made a splint, but he needs a doctor." "Don't you have a phone?" "No, no phone, no car, no road. We're 5 miles from the nearest village at Lochranza." Lochranza. He'd heard the name before but couldn't place it. "Where are we, this place?" She looked at him curiously. "Craigan Cottage," she said. He raised his eyebrows and she continued. "You really don't know, do you?" "I can't remember a thing. I woke up a few miles from here and before now didn't even know my name." "That's so weird. How was I when I got here?" He wanted to ask her about the blood but dreaded her answer. "Like death. You babbled. Rubbish mostly. But you're strong. By rights you should still be ill." He remembered how quickly his leg had healed and mentioned this to her. "Your ankle was fine, Tom. Not a mark on you." He must have misheard her. He was thinking what she must have meant, but she sat up, her eyes frowning with concern. "There was nothing wrong with you, except for a few maggots in your hair. And your hand. You were obsessed with your hand." Tom held his breath. Whether he liked it or not, the answer he needed to hear was coming his way. Was he evil or simply mad? She lowered her voice. "You wanted us to wash it clean. Kept screaming about the blood." She glanced at his hand and then averted her gaze when she saw that he had noticed. "There wasn't a mark on you, Tom. No blood. No cut. Nothing." DreamWorks.com.